Hello, everyone. It is Thursday, August 5th, 2021, and this is the Status Check with Spivey, where we talk about life, law school, and admissions.
This is Anna Hicks, Spivey Consulting COO, and not too long ago, I was a law school applicant myself. I remember when I first thought about applying to law school, I didn't know anything about the process. I started researching online, and everything I read was full of terminology and assumptions I didn't understand. So we wanted to make this episode, Law School Admissions 101, for people who are at the very beginning of this process and just want to understand the basics of how it works and what you can expect if you're thinking about applying to law school. Before we get started, I want to note that we're trying to get through a lot of material today, and there's a great deal of nuance to most of what we're going to be talking about. So if you want a more in-depth look at some of these concepts, check out our other podcast episodes, check out our blog, start doing research online. Our hope is that this podcast will provide you the background knowledge and the context to really understand that further research you'll be doing. So let's start at the beginning. As of today, there are 199 law schools fully accredited by the American Bar Association, or the ABA, 199 law schools that qualify you to sit for the bar exam and become a lawyer anywhere in the U.S. Who can go to law school? If you've completed a four-year bachelor's degree at an accredited university, or are set to complete it by the time you would enroll in law school if you're applying as a college senior, then generally speaking, you are eligible to apply to law school. You don't have to have a certain major, you don't have to have taken specific coursework, you just have to have that bachelor's degree. Also, the prestige of your undergrad really doesn't matter that much. It can sometimes be a feather on the scale on the margins, but you can absolutely go to an elite law school even if you didn't attend an elite college. You can also go to law school either straight from undergrad, or you can take time off and get some work experience. It's generally advisable, all else equal, to get some work experience first, but you can absolutely have great results and get into top law schools without work experience also. Now, I want to emphasize this. The most important factor in being admitted to law school is your LSAT score. The second most important factor is your undergraduate GPA. More so than in undergraduate admissions, and more so than in other graduate school admissions, for better or often for worse, your numbers, LSAT and undergraduate GPA, are emphasized above all else. Your background and application materials are certainly important and can make a big difference in your admissions results, but it's exceptionally rare for those things to get you into a law school where your LSAT isn't at least in the ballpark of what they're looking for. GPA can be a little bit more flexible. There are many more people who graduate from college with a 4.0 than people who score a 180 or even above a 170 on the LSAT. So if you have a super high LSAT score and a lower GPA, you may still be in the running for schools where your GPA isn't what they're looking for. Applicants in that situation, with a high LSAT but a relatively low GPA, are often referred to online as quote-unquote splitters. Some law schools are more splitter-friendly, while other law schools are less splitter-friendly, and that can change from year to year, mostly in small increments, but occasionally also significantly. So that's something to keep in mind if you fall in this category. So if you're listening to this and you're still in undergrad or you're going into undergrad, definitely focus on getting the highest GPA you can, and regardless, you're going to want to put a lot of time and effort into studying for the LSAT. It's not the type of test you should just go into cold and see how you do. It's very learnable, and you can make a massive difference in terms of the schools you get into and the scholarship money you receive if you're willing to put more time into studying. So let's backtrack a bit and talk about the basics of the LSAT. The LSAT doesn't aim to test your knowledge of concepts or information. It aims to test your skills and abilities in logic, reasoning, and reading comprehension. It's scored on a 120 to 180 scale, with 180 being the highest possible LSAT score. Nowadays, and parts of this have changed recently multiple times as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and may change further in the future, but the LSAT is a four-section test administered at home with remote proctoring, with each section being 35 minutes long. There's one logical reasoning section, one reading comprehension section, one analytical reasoning or quote-unquote logic game section, and one experimental section that could be any of those three. You won't know which section is the experimental when you take it, but it's basically just used to test out how people perform on possible questions for future LSATs, and it's not a part of your actual LSAT score. There's also a writing sample that you have to do at some point to get your LSAT score. You just don't have to do it at the same time as the actual test, and you only have to do it once, even if you take multiple LSATs. That's a change from how it used to be. The writing sample is kind of like the SAT writing section, but it isn't scored. It just goes to law schools along with your LSAT score, and they can look at it if they want to. The common wisdom is to take the writing sample seriously and try to do a good job in the moment, but don't stress about it and don't take time to study for it. If you take the LSAT multiple times, and you can retake the LSAT, in the vast majority of cases, your highest score is the one that matters. Law schools will be able to see all of your LSAT scores, but the highest score is the one that they use to calculate their overall LSAT median. And that LSAT median is what goes to the ABA and U.S. News & World Report for rankings purposes. That high score is by far the one that matters the most. It's the one that we're talking about when we say your LSAT score is the most important part of your law school applications. Your highest LSAT is the one that counts. LSAT and GPA medians are a hugely important concept to understand in the law school admissions process, and we'll talk about that more in a second. I wanted to cover, just briefly, you may have also heard that law schools are taking tests other than the LSAT, mostly the GRE. Some law schools do accept the GRE in lieu of the LSAT, although if you have both, they're only going to care about your LSAT. Things are still developing here. This is all relatively recent in the last 5 years or so. But it does seem like, for now, applying with only a GRE score will make your process at least a little slower and potentially more difficult. That may well not be the case in a few years, though. Let's talk about your undergraduate GPA, too, since it's the most important aspect of your law school application apart from your LSAT, and it can often be different from the GPA that's on your college transcript. If you transferred universities, if you dual enrolled in community college during high school, if you went to college for a semester 10 years ago and then re-enrolled and got your bachelor's only recently, you need to send all of those transcripts into LSAC, the company that administers the LSAT and where you'll submit all of your applications, and they'll calculate a cumulative GPA for you that includes all of the credits you've ever taken prior to getting your first bachelor's degree. There are a few other things that might influence your LSAC cumulative GPA to be different from the GPA on your college transcript, too. If you retook a class, for example, LSAC will factor in both the old grade and the new grade. If you have any A pluses, even if they only count as a 4.0 at your college, LSAC is going to count them as a 4.33, so that can make a big difference if you have a bunch of A pluses. Regardless, that cumulative GPA number calculated by LSAC is what law schools are looking at and caring about, because that's the number that factors into the calculation of their GPA median. And as we discussed before, those medians are hugely important. So let's talk about medians. LSAT and GPA medians are the concrete numerical measurements by which law schools track their admissions efforts. These medians are two of the biggest metrics in the U.S. News & World Report law school rankings, and definitely the biggest ones that law schools can meaningfully influence on a year-to-year basis. There are other reasons that law schools care about medians, among them just wanting to bring in a class that has the best chances of succeeding academically in law school, and LSAT and undergraduate GPA both predict that to some extent. But rankings are a big part of it too, for better or for worse. Actually, a quick note on rankings specifically. U.S. News & World Report is basically the only game in town for law school rankings. There are other smaller rankings of law schools. A lot of people really like Above the Law's rankings, for example, but the ones that get the most views and have the most influence by far is U.S. News. That's how it is right now, and it could certainly change in the future, but it's helpful to understand the influence that these rankings have on this process. That said, we don't recommend choosing where to go to law school based on the rankings alone. Look at the stuff that goes into the rankings. Employment outcomes, student-faculty ratio, for example. But don't make decisions on where to apply or where to attend based on rankings alone. Especially outside of the very top schools, the rankings change, and sometimes drastically, every year. So look at the data. Do your research. Shameless plug here, but check out MyRank by Spivey.com, and you can even create your own custom rankings based on the data and metrics that matter to you. We've talked about and criticized rankings a great deal in past podcasts and blog posts, so I'm not going to belabor this point any further, but just be aware that the rankings are a significant factor in sort of the law school admissions world, and be cognizant of that, but probably don't base your decisions on where to apply or where to attend just based on rankings. So how do you figure out which law schools you'll be competitive for? How do you figure out where to apply? You'll want to start with the numbers because, as I've discussed, they're the most important part of your application. If you're interested in a particular law school, look at their LSAT and GPA medians. You can find the medians on law school's websites either by searching for their class profile or looking for their 509 disclosures, which are basically a standardized set of disclosed data that every law school is required by the ABA to put out there. Class profiles start to come out in August or September, but the official 509 numbers don't come out until December. So just be aware and take note of whether you're looking at the medians for the cycle directly before yours or two cycles ago. Especially in a year like this, with a huge increase in high LSAT applicants last cycle, that could make a big difference. So just be aware of the timeline. And for quick reference, you can find all of the 509 data on abarequireddisclosures.org. So let's assume that you're looking at the numbers from the cycle directly before yours. Let's say that for a given school, they have a 3.6 GPA median and a 162 LSAT median. If your LSAT score is higher than a 162 and your GPA is higher than a 3.6, in general, you have a pretty good shot at that law school. Typically, even with an otherwise average application, you're probably going to get into a school where you're above both medians. If your LSAT is higher than a 162, but your GPA is lower than a 3.6, but only by a little bit, let's say you have a 164 and a 3.4, you still probably have a pretty good shot. If you're a true quote-unquote splitter, Say you have a 165 LSAT, but a 2.9 GPA, then probably you have a shot, but it's going to depend to some extent on the law school specifically and on the rest of your application. On the flip side, if you are below both medians, you are generally going to have a very difficult time getting into that law school. Certainly, there are many exceptions every year, but it typically takes something pretty significant and differentiated to get you into a law school where you're below both medians. And usually it's going to be off of the waitlist. Now, if you're above the GPA median, you might have somewhat of an easier time, but your LSAT should at least be close. If we're looking at that example school I mentioned earlier, and you have a 4.0 and a 161, 1 point below their median, you probably have a decent shot with strong application materials. If you have a 4.0 and a 150, though, you probably don't. I know I talked about this before, but your LSAT is truly the most important part of your law school admissions chances. Now, everything I just said is oversimplified to some extent. In an ideal world, you wouldn't be making these determinations based on a school's historic medians. You'd be looking at them based on target medians, or the medians that they are setting as sort of their goals at the beginning of the cycle, because that's really going to tell you how a school will see your file numerically. But of course, schools aren't publishing their target medians. There are ways that you can sort of estimate those target medians. Most years, most law schools are targeting 1 point higher than their prior year median, at least at the very beginning of the cycle before they have to adjust their expectations. But also this year, that will probably be different. If schools saw a huge increase last year, then they may just be trying to maintain the same LSAT median. So take everything I just said as sort of broad rules of thumb. Regardless, you should try to apply to at least one or two safety schools where you have some leeway, where even if they're targeting a median 2 or 3 points higher than the prior year, your LSAT score is still higher than that. And then, of course, a healthy range of target and reach schools also. So apart from your LSAT and GPA, what goes into a law school application? You'll submit all of your applications through the LSAC website, lsac.org. You'll also need to send in all of your transcripts to LSAC, and that's also where your letter of recommendation writers will upload their recommendations for you. Just quickly on letters of recommendation, since most people are familiar with them through undergraduate admissions and they're pretty similar, most law schools require 2 letters of recommendation, but will accept 3 or 4. That varies by school, though, so make sure to read each law school's instructions carefully. Most law schools want at least 1 or probably 2 of these to be from professors, but it's also often a good idea to have one from a previous employer or something from the professional world. So let's move on to the other application components. Probably the most important essay you'll have to write for your law school application is your personal statement. Law school's guidelines for the personal statement can vary a bit, but for most law schools, you're going to submit an essay that's 2 pages double-spaced. The law school personal statement is not a statement of purpose, similar to other grad schools and professional programs. You are not supposed to just be saying, this is what I've done so far in life, this is why I want to go to law school, and I hope to practice X type of law and accomplish Y and Z things in my career. Ideally, it's much more personal, as the name implies. Ideally, it's telling the reader something about yourself and giving them a window into who you are and what you value. I could go on about how to write a good personal statement literally all day, but we don't have time for that. If you're looking for where to start in your research for your personal statement, my suggestion would be to watch our YouTube video on how to choose a personal statement topic from our consultant, Derek Meeker, who's also a former dean of admissions at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. And I also recommend reading some of our sample personal statements that we have up on our blog. And we'll link both of those in the notes of this podcast. This is the last thing I'll say on it. The best personal statements aren't the ones you wrote for some hypothetical fancy admissions committee. They're the ones that you wrote for yourself, sincerely and from the heart, about something deeply important to you and how you've developed as a person. Another potentially important part of your law school application is the diversity statement. Now, diversity statements are optional essays, and not everyone does or should submit one. But if you're a racial or ethnic minority, if you're LGBT+, if you're a first-generation college student, if you face significant adversity growing up, all of these and more can be a worthwhile topic for a diversity statement. Just don't try to force a topic if you don't naturally have one. A quick note on diversity as well, as far as figuring out your school list. There are a number of racial and ethnic groups that have been hugely underrepresented in the legal field, both historically and still to this day. Law schools recognize the importance and the value of having greater diversity in the classroom and in the legal field. So if you come from one of those groups, law schools see the value in that. Look at past data from applicants with similar backgrounds to you, talk to past applicants, you may be able to aim higher than you think. Other things you'll submit to law schools include your resume, quote-unquote YX essays, where you describe why you're interested in one specific law school, other supplemental essays and short answers that vary from school to school and can cover a whole range of topics, and addenda. Let's talk about addenda briefly. There are a few different types of addenda, some of which are required if they apply to you and some of which are not. In general, you submit an addendum to further briefly explain some part of your application or background that requires further explanation. For example, you might write a GPA addendum if you had a serious illness during one of your semesters of undergrad, and that one semester caused your GPA to drop significantly. If you took the LSAT twice and your second score was 15 points higher than your first score, some schools might require you to explain the difference in an addendum, which is often just as easy as saying, I knew I could do better after my first test, so I doubled down on studying and ended up scoring more in line with my skills and abilities. Or you may want to write an LSAT addendum even if it's not required. For example, you scored poorly on your first test because you got a horrible migraine that day. The other main type of addendum is a character and fitness or C&F addendum. Every ABA law school asks you in their applications a series of C&F questions, and if you answer yes to any of them, you typically have to write an addendum to explain it. Law schools ask these questions to help them determine whether you're going to be able to pass the character and fitness section of the bar. They're mainly about past interactions with the legal system or formal disciplinary action in higher ed. If you have a criminal record of any kind, or if you were ever suspended or sanctioned by a university, you're probably going to have to write an addendum about it. There are a few important things that I want to highlight about character and fitness. First, you should always, always answer the questions honestly, because when you apply for the bar, they're going to look at those answers and cross-reference them and fact-check them. Second, if you have to write a C&F addendum, take ownership of whatever happened instead of making excuses and shifting blame. And lastly, just don't worry too much. Many law school applicants apply with a few speeding tickets or an alcohol citation from college or even minor drug charges or something like a DUI and still get into great law schools. Next, let's talk about law school interviews. Interviews are a relatively recent phenomenon in law school admissions, and many law schools don't do interviews at all. But the number that do is increasing every year, and especially if you're applying to top schools, you'll probably be applying to at least a few schools that interview. As far as the structure of the interviews, it varies from school to school. Some law schools, for example, Northwestern, give any applicant the opportunity to interview. More law schools conduct interviews by invitation only. Most of the law schools that interview conduct them remotely via video conference. Others have local alumni do in-person interviews. And an increasing number are using recorded interview formats where you don't actually speak to a human being on the other end. The questions just come up on the screen and then you record yourself answering them. Regardless of the format or structure, many law school interviews serve the primary purpose of gauging your interpersonal skills and your ability to perform well in interviews for legal employment. So always try to appear professional and upbeat. So let's talk about timelines. When should you apply to law school and when should you expect to receive your decisions? Law school admissions is rolling in nature, which means that you can apply at any point between the application opening date and the deadline, which is often like 8 or 9 months. But the law school will start reading applications and making decisions before that deadline. So someone who applies early in the cycle may be admitted before other people even send in their applications. That said, law school admissions is not rolling in the sense that applications are read in the order of the date that they were received. Typically, law schools will read the strongest applications first, numbers-wise, and then move down to the less strong numbers-wise applications after that. And usually the only people being admitted super early in the cycle are people with high numbers who likely would have been admitted even if they'd applied later in the cycle. And even if you apply on the first day that applications are open in September, you might end up waiting longer than people who apply in December or January or February, depending on how competitive your application is. We always see applicants online overemphasizing the importance of applying early, and it really isn't as important as a lot of people think. It's almost always a better idea to wait to submit a better application, for example, with a higher LSAT score if you're thinking about retaking, than it is to rush to submit an early application that's lower quality than it could be. In general, law school applications tend to open in August and September. The earliest admits, and again, it's mostly applicants above both medians who are being admitted in the first rounds, could be as early as September or October, or could be as late as December or January. And most law schools will continue to make offers well into March and April, and then may continue to make admits off of the waitlist throughout the summer and sometimes all the way up through orientation. That's actually a good segue into talking about waitlists a little bit further. Most law schools admit a good number of applicants off of their waitlists every year. That said, it's difficult to estimate someone's chances of being admitted off of the waitlist, in part because schools waitlist vastly different numbers of applicants from one another. Some law schools are known for waitlisting hundreds of applicants, most of whom will never be admitted, while others keep their waitlists relatively limited to the candidates who really have the best chance of admission. There's also a strategy to maximizing your chances off of the waitlist. You shouldn't just sit around without doing anything and hope they admit you. We have lots of advice on our blog and podcast about how to increase your chances off the waitlist. So if you're interested in that, we'll link some of those in the notes. Lastly, I'd just like to mention scholarships, because this isn't necessarily intuitive to everyone when they start this process. Every law school except for the top three, Harvard, Yale, and Stanford, offer merit-based scholarships. Side note, those top three only offer need-based financial aid. Most law students take out student loans to pay for law school. You can get a loan for up to the full cost of tuition and fees, plus living expenses if you don't have scholarships, and that can easily add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars that you end up having to pay off. So if you don't have the ability to pay for law school tuition out of your own pocket, which the vast majority of people don't, and if you want to avoid student loan debt, apply to schools where your numbers make you a really strong candidate. Huge scholarships are not at all uncommon for law schools, and you don't have to have cured cancer or won an Olympic gold medal to get one. So if you're trying to be debt conscious, definitely apply to some schools where you think you're competitive for scholarships. Okay, so that's pretty much everything we have time for today. If you're new to law school admissions, I hope this gave you an idea of what to expect and what to start thinking about. And if you're looking for more in-depth information and strategy, please check out our blog and our other podcasts or any of the other great resources available online. Just remember to take everything with a grain of salt. There's plenty of wonderful information out there, but there's plenty of bad advice too. So cross-reference and double-check everything before you rely on it, even this podcast. I have one last piece of parting advice. This is an anxious and stressful and difficult process for most everyone. So if you're able to stay upbeat and positive, that's a differentiating factor that's going to stand out to law schools in a good way. And even if you're more on the anxious and stressed out side of things, goodness knows I often am, just don't let this process negatively impact how you think about yourself and your value in this world. The vast majority of applicants get at least one or two rejections, but the most a law school can reject is a few pieces of paper representing a tiny sliver of who you are as a human being. So try not to let it get to you. Good luck, stay strong, and stay positive. Thank you for listening.